My name's Paul, I'm an addict. Immediately the mic stand's not in the right place. I feel quite nervous tonight, and always as when I start to do any chair, I always seem to feel that I'm not qualified at all to, which is a total load of rubbish, you know. But it feels like sometimes I'm not qualified to carry a message of recovery. But I've been around for 16 years in NA, and I had my 16-year birthday yesterday. And that's not a... I think that's for NA, not for me. But, you know, and it is down to NA. It's not down to me. It's not like I'm some wonderful, recovering, perfect person, you know. That's not what it's been like for me at all. When I first come into these rooms, you know, I couldn't hear... I couldn't speak. I had a tooth missing in the front ear. I had hair down here. I had no glasses, though I needed glasses. I looked scruffy and dirty, and I didn't really care about how I looked. I felt hideous and dirty inside, you know. Now, I've heard people say that, exactly what I've said, barring the outside stuff, about their inside stuff, and they've had property, money, prestige, fame, but the insides, I've heard them say, they still felt the same as I did. And what that was they, you know, they was, I was beaten. You know, I was totally beaten by addiction. I was hopeless and helpless. I was quite intelligent, but there's no way I could think my way round the disease of addiction. There was no way that I could get out of it. No body who I'd come into contact with had any kind of solution to what was wrong with me, you know. And I'd heard, you know, I've heard in these rooms, and I'd, you know, and it was the same for me. You know, I'm a textbook addict. I was an addict. You know, I think a lot of people confuse addiction with a progression of using drugs or whatever that may be. You know, but I know people well fucked up in this program who just smoke a bit of grass. And that's why I know it's not about drugs, you know. It is about drugs if you pick them up, by the way. But, you know, the disease of addiction... It's a disease of addiction, and for me, for this addict, it was there a long time before I picked up. And it was progressing, maybe from whenever. It's really, you know, I know people in recovery, and I've been around a while, and I've seen a lot of people come and go, and I've talked to people about. You know, am I an addict? Aren't I an addict? You know, I haven't used for 2 years, you know, and, you know, my life's, you know, I've got a girlfriend and a new baby on the way. I got a flat and a new car. You know, I've got a job. I work in the drugs field. I work down the market. I've heard a lot of stories in these rooms, you know. And the point of that I was trying to make was that all that stuff, again, you know, ain't going to keep you clean. You know, that is not, in my experience, that stuff is not going to keep you clean. And I kind of learnt the hard way with that one, you know. I should share a little bit about my using, you know. And I'll tell you what was really nice. When we had the 10-minute break here, and I never seen so much laughter. And I see so many people checking each other out and saying hello and smiling and kind of just happy to be alive and in recovery, you know, and doing the right thing. And that's really nice, you know. My life before I picked up drugs, you know, always felt kind of uncomfortable from a very early age. I've tried to describe how I felt, and I guess, you know, inadequate kind of seems like a bit of a textbook, but I felt like my skin was too tight. I felt like I was ugly. I didn't feel right. I just didn't feel fucking on the money, kind of, so to speak. I didn't feel enough. I thought I should know. You know, my old man was a great one, and he, you know, he was an alcoholic. He was a great one for telling me, you know, what I should be doing all the time after I'd fucked up, basically, you know. And he'd tell me, you know, you shouldn't have been nicked. You shouldn't have, you know, got in trouble. It was, you know, all those shoulds in life that... And he was full of put down and ridicule, you know, and stuff like that. So that goes with the illness, I guess. I'm not sure where I'm going with this one, so bear with me. So I grew up totally ill at ease, you know, and people later said to me, you know, oh, that's the disease of addiction. I was like, oh, yeah, wonderful, you know, fantastic. Because, you know, I thought, and that was always dangerous for me, thinking, I realised that, I was told that later on, you know, because I'm jumping a bit here, but I guess, you know, I always thought I was quite smart, you know. I went to grammar school and passed the 11 plus, so I was quite smart, quite intelligent, and I always thought that I could kind of think my way out of problems and have a solution to most things, and myself, you know, I was kind of quite self-sufficiency was what came from my family, you know, and also alongside that came, don't tell no one your business, you know, keep stum, you know, don't tell anyone what happens in the family, you know, keep the secrets quiet, you know, keep secrets, and that was pretty much how it was. I kind of grew up kind of feeling ill at ease. Felt like I didn't fit, felt ugly, felt inadequate, was quite smart, and my family was quite dysfunctional, as they'd say. So all this going on, I kind of didn't really understand what was going on, you know, inside me at the time. But as soon as I picked up a cigarette at an early age, I picked up cigarettes about 7 or 8. Then I picked up alcohol. We used to go around the kind of parties. I grew up in a drinking culture around the flats. Lots of parties, and the kids would kind of hoover up and nick all the beer and we'd get drunk ourselves. But from that first kind of drink, I realised it made me feel better. It absolutely made me feel better. And then I started, smoking grass and drinking. And that was pretty much the normal, you know, that was what everyone did where I grew up, that's what we did, you know. And then there was powders and pills, you know, different kind of pills from your mum's bathroom cabinet or your dad's script or whatever was going about, you know. We'd take it, and then there was sulfate and acid in them days. I kind of got into it like any normal kid and really loved it. What drugs did for me was they totally took away all that disease. They totally took away, you know, for the first time, I think, in my entire life, when I took drugs, I started feeling part of what was going on around me. I started to feel good enough to talk to girls, you know, and confident enough to crack a few jokes or whatever, you know, and felt really part of life for the first time. And so drugs were, you know, and I loved drugs, you know. I loved sitting around smoking. I liked sitting around giggling, you know. I liked going out and watching bands, you know, and listening to loud rock music and kind of, you know, I loved the whole rock and roll, drugs, sex, the whole, you know, nine yards, you know, fitted like a glove for me. And you know, everyone who I kind of had it with it was pretty much the same for them, you know. But, you know, I progressed, I started using harder drugs. That just was the way of the world, I think, for me, you know. I kind of tried everything else. My brother was a junkie, my old man was an alcoholic, and I've heard it said that I couldn't wait to grow up, I couldn't wait to be older, and I couldn't wait to use hard drugs. And I thought that was where it was at, you know, that was it. And what went out the window alongside that was my schooling, my family, you know, and I start, you know, that self-sufficiency kicked in, and before I knew it, I was kind of used in pretty much every day, and all the time, you know, I thought that I kind of had it pretty much sussed. I kind of thought that it was pretty much, I was in control. I knew exactly what I was doing, you know. When I got a little bit older, you know, I'd put the party down and kind of have a family and have a life, but it didn't kind of happen like that for me, you know. My girlfriend got pregnant and I had my son at 16, and by that time I was kind of moving into kind of harder drugs, and by the age of 18 I was a registered heroin addict with the government and getting a Harley Street prescription of methadone. And on top of that, I used everything else, you know. I didn't really want to put down, you know. I didn't really want to live a life without drugs. I really thought, you know, well, I didn't even think too much about it. I just, you know, word on the street was, you know, I'm doing a bit too much gear, you know, and I'm a bit of a liability, you know. My drug habit had to be funded, and that was done through, you know, criminality. That was what I learned on the street as well, you know, how to thieve, how to burgle, how to rob, how to keep stum, how to go to prison, how to go, you know, how to do bird, who to have it with, who not to have it with, where to drink, where not to drink, you know, and quite a sad existence. But at the time I thought it was quite, you know, quite worldly, and I was quite manly, and I thought I was a bit of a face, and I had it with kind of gangster people, and I was known in clubs and places where I could sell stolen gear and stuff, so I kind of thought I was doing all right. I missed my son's birth. I was out getting stoned, got there a day and a half late. Didn't seem that important. You know, if I'm really honest, what seemed more important was partying. I was out in a club, I was out with some pals, and we was going on, so, you know, that's what I did. What I didn't know all the way through it was that I had an illness, you know, that I had a disease, you know, and I found out when I got to NA, and I say that not to, you know, because I hear that word a lot now, and believe me, in the early days, people didn't talk about the illness, they didn't talk about the disease. One or two people did, you know, it wasn't kind of cool to be working the steps in NA in the early days, you know. I used to go over West London and stuff, and you were near, no one mentioned God, you were near, people mentioned steps. And it wasn't a great big fellowship, you know. It wasn't kind of strong and hard like it is now, you know, with some hardcore people in here who really kind of do a lot, you know. Them days it really seemed like the blind leading the blind, I guess it was. But, you know, I'd go to prison, I'd get nicked, I'd go to prison, I'd do things I didn't, you know, I said I'd never do, but I did them anyway. I'd go to prison, I'd sit in prison and I'd say to myself, you know, how did this happen? What went wrong? You know, and it was always, you know, everyone else's fault. That was the way my thinking was. You know, it was always about, well, if that old Bill hadn't kind of walked in on us, you know, or if they wouldn't have been at the end of the road and blocked that road off, or if, you know, if so and so was 30 seconds faster, we were gone. You know, and all that kind of stuff, and I'd sit around and I'd think, you know, but not once in all of that did I think, you know, that my problem might be that I was actually, you know, a using heroin addict who was out there, you know, 24/7 finding ways and means to get more. You know, I was out there using, and everything I did was geared into the using, but I didn't know that. I didn't know none of that. You know, I thought I was, that's what I did, you know. There was, you know, I'd often thought about it, and I thought, well, you know, there's barristers, and there's solicitors, and there's probation officers, and there's footballers, and doctors, and social workers, and teachers, and there's all these people, and me, I'm a junkie, you know, that's just my fucking lot. And I guess that was what I had to get on with, you know, and I didn't believe there was any way out of it. And I certainly didn't, it didn't enter my mind that if I actually stopped using everything, just absolutely stopped using every single drug, including, you know, alcohol, that my life might change. It never entered my mind. What did enter my head was, maybe if I can slow down on the brown, maybe if I just, you know, take ease at the weekend and drink white wine, you know, maybe I'd be Jack Daniels and oil, smoke oil, or, you know, all these kind of weird and wonderful kind of concoctions and, you know, different mixes and trying to get the alchemy right to get me kind of so that I could manage my using, and I didn't wind up in jail all the time, and I didn't wind up hurting everyone all the time, and I didn't wind up fucking, you know, mad and violent and on my own all the time, you know. And I try and kind of get the balance and try and get the drugs right and try and get the people right, you know, and everything I tried didn't work. Every single thing I tried didn't get me clean, you know. The only time I was ever kind of, or, you know, kind of clean was when I was sedated in strip shells. That was the only time I couldn't get drugs and use them myself. And I couldn't work it out. And that was the most frustrating and painful thing for me. That deep inside of me, there was a voice that said, you know, this ain't fucking right. This ain't the way to live your life. This is not the way that you're meant to have it. This is not the way it's meant to be. And the next, you know, I'd sit in that prison cell and I'd say, right, when I come out, you know, it's going to be different. I was full of best intention. I was full of spirit again. You know, I got my health back. I'd get, you know, I'd been off the gear. I'd get, you know, I'd work out in the gym. I'd do circuit training and I'd hit them doors and I'd be out of that fucking prison door and I'd be on that train and I'd be in the nearest bar. I'd be in the nearest off license. And I'd be off again. And I couldn't work it out. I could not fucking work it out. And this went on and on and on. You know, and people around me died. Same as me. You know, people I thought weren't as bad as me or weren't really serious users were dying. You know, people were going over left, right and centre. And the party was over. The party had been over for a long time, but I had no ability to change. I had no idea what was wrong with me. All I had was my best intention and my own thoughts. And they were riddled with the disease of addiction. So no wonder I used, you know, no wonder I used. That was the best solution to my problem I could come up with, was stick a needle in my arm, stick another line up my nose, smoke something, drink something harder, take more. That was the solution. And it brought me to my knees. You know, I tried to commit suicide. I didn't care if I, you know, jumped in front of cars or, you know, I'd lost all kind of hope with life and I'd lost all kind of hope with you know, with the using. You know, the using had beaten me. It had taken me right down to the, you know, right to the floor. And inside, you know, I just wanted out and I couldn't get out, you know. And you know, as things happen, you know, I've heard it said in the book and I've heard it said in meetings, you know, and I hit a rock bottom, you know, and I, you know, many people have got weird and wonderful rock bottoms, but my one was, I remember walking down the Harrow Road and it was raining, and it was in the evening, it was 8 o'clock and something, and I remember, you know, tears coming out of my eyes, and I remember just screaming, I need a fucking break, and I was talking to God, you know. And things started happening, not quickly, but things started happening around me, things that I didn't really understand at the time or know about, you know. But I wound up with a good friend of mine, and she said I could live with her, you know, and blah, blah, blah. Before I knew it, people were putting telephones in my hands and saying, you know, phone up this place, phone up that place. And I phoned up a treatment centre, and I didn't know about NA. I'd heard NA from my girlfriend, the one before I'd split up with, who said she was T-person in an NA meeting. And I just thought NA was for losers and kind of, you know, sad cases, you know. And that was the only mention I'd had of it. I didn't know about it. I didn't know what it was about or what it was there to do. And anyway, you know, I wound up in on the telephone and they said, come down to this treatment centre. And it wasn't the first time I'd been to a treatment centre. I'd gone down about 2 months before this with a friend of mine who you know, we'd go out to Graft and we'd get money. And you know, he was the same as me. At the end of the day, we had this money in our pocket and we weren't going to use. We were just going to go and have a drink and be sensible. And I remember walking down this road in Maida Vale from one end to the other. I walked. By the time we got to the other end, at one end we decided we weren't going to use that day. Just going to have a drink and maybe have a bit of methadone. And then by the time we got to the other end of the road, it was like, fuck it, get a cab, let's go and score. And that was my best shot. That was my absolute best shot. And I'd gone down to this treatment centre, basically because I didn't want to be on my own either. I was staying at someone's house and he said, oh, I've got in this treatment centre down in the countryside that you've got to be clean, but they teach you how to stay clean, you know, and they get you kind of dig fields and stuff, and you do a lot of... It's a biker. It was run by a biker. So I thought, well, that seems like somewhat, you know, something. You know, I'll go with you. And he said, no, you can't just come down there. You've got to be referred. And I went, oh, bollocks, I'll come with you. So I went down there with him. And we got to the gates. And they said, and he'd used as well. We both used on the train. And they said to him, well, you can come in, but what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'll come down with him. And, you know, I'm a junkie as well. Let us in, kind of thing. And he went, you know, well, you've used. And I said, well, yeah, of course I've used, you know. That's what I do, you know, that's why I'm here. And he said, no, fuck off, we'll phone the old Bill. And I'm like, oh, you know, big rumpus, same old nonsense, you know. And I'm off at the station, I'm on the phone crying to me mum, you know. And that was where it took me. But anyway, I got down to this 12, by hook or by crook, and my sister put me on a train. I nearly missed a train trying to buy a six-pack of, four packs then, a special brew. And, you know, the guard, I had to jump on, and I wound up on this train going down to Plymouth. I didn't know where Plymouth was. I don't know if anyone's been down the West Country. It's not a long way on them trains. It goes on forever. And I'm sitting on this train. I thought I'd do a couple of these special brews. I'd had some methadone in the morning. I'll tell you what was interesting, the night before, I bought a bag about 8 o'clock. I thought, I have this in the morning. I had gear in the day. And I always remember this, because I put it in the cupboard, in the drawer, and I couldn't sleep. But that was me all the time with gear, you know. It weren't like I'd have half a couple of lines out of me packet of Charlie and put it back in my suit pocket for the next weekend. You know, that weren't what it was like with me. That gear was in the drawer, and I fucking knew it. That was the problem. I knew the gear was in the drawer, and I was in the bed, and I was there with the girlfriend who was putting me up, but, you know, we wound up in bed. That's where we, you know, that was what was going on as well. But I knew that gear was in that drawer, and I couldn't sleep. And as soon as he was asleep, I was up, and that gear was gone. So when I got in the morning, bit of methadone, got on the train, four cans of special brew, down two of them, fell asleep, I think, downed another one, fell back to sleep. They woke me up on the train, got off the train, got into a cab, said to go to this treatment facility, went to, got to the other end, got out of the cab, opened a can of beer, drank it straight down in one, flung it into the bin and walked into this treatment centre. And that was on September the 4th, 1990. And I picked up, from that moment, from that last time I used and I'd done a 10-day detox, well, 9.5 days, they taught me about addiction. They taught me about the disease of addiction. They told me what was wrong with me. And they told me there was a solution to it. And I heard that in the first couple of weeks. And from that moment on, I never used again. That is a complete and utter miracle. Because I used every day. And if I could, I'd use every minute of every day, all the way through my life. There wasn't one day that went past where I could get, where I was free to get drugs that I didn't use. One shape, one drug or another. And from the moment this was given to me, I didn't kind of hear, you know, it wasn't like a kind of, you know, you hear spiritual awakening is a word, you know, that I love, because I know what it means. It means an awakening of the spirit. And what awoke in me was my spirit. But what really awoke in me was that for the first time in my life, I really wanted to live. I'd never thought about living. I'd never thought about actually having a life. You know, I was so introvert and so kind of, you know, so inwardly focused, they say in the books. You know, all I thought about was me, all I thought about was my drugs, and all I thought about was how I could get more. And that was my thinking pretty much, you know, in a nutshell. And that was my using in a nutshell. And what they taught me down there was a solution, and it was Narcotics Anonymous. And they took me to my first NA meeting. And I was blown away. I was blown away. Not because I really heard the message loud and clear. What I see in there was people who were talking about using and then talking about recovery. And I believed them. They didn't look like they were using to me. You know, I didn't think, oh, there's a right catch here, or, you know, they're all full of nonsense. These people were the same as me, you know, they were exactly the same as me. And I remember the first meeting I went to, and there was a guy 2 years clean who was the secretary. He was 2 years clean. And he was a DJ, you know. He was doing what he'd always wanted to do. He weren't a DJ before, he was a DJ when he got clean. And he had a watch, a nice kettle, and he had lovely clean clothes on, and he was very good looking and smart. He's a mixed race kid, and he spoke sensibly, and he hugged me, give me an hug, and I was blown away, absolutely blown away. And that coupled with those meetings we went down in the bus, you know, that coupled with the treatment facility I was in, for the first time I'd heard the word abstinence. And the minute I heard it, the minute they said, well, you have to be abstinent, I think before they got to the end of abstinent, I know it didn't kind of, I knew it meant something very serious, you know. And my head was, and I didn't really know what it meant, but it sounded serious. You're going to have to be abstinent. And by the time they got to the end of that, my thought had kicked in, well, I'm not, you know, because I actually know best. You know, that was my thinking, you know. That was where I was at. And when they said to me, you know, you've got to do the steps, you know, you've got to start working these, you've got to write a life story and start working these steps, my immediate thoughts were, well, that might be all right for you, but not for me. Because I'm not doing that. But that was where I was geared into an illness, which, you know, is jails, institutions and death. Let's get it right. Because it's so easy to come to these meetings and not understand, you know, the full nine yards of what this is all about. because we get clean a little while and our lives come back together and we get girlfriends and boyfriends and we get flats and we get jobs and all the rest of it, and then, you know, after a year or two, it becomes about kind of, you know, where I'm going on holiday, who I'm going with, you know. We tend to forget, you know, what this is all about, you know. And then, you know, it becomes about, well, I don't really read the book anymore, you know. I can't. I've read the book. That's a cracker, that one. I've read the book. I've done the steps. It's not funny, but I sat in a meeting once with a geezer who stood up. He actually stood up. He was sharing time. And he stood up and he said, I'm 18 months clean. I've done the 12 steps. And I actually feel like, you know, I've graduated. And I'm sitting there 9.5 years clean. And I'm looking at this guy and I'm thinking, what's going on here? And he said, I'm actually graduated and I've outgrown NA and I'm moving on. And he left. Now, I don't know, you know, I don't know about that one. I really don't know. But I've seen a lot of people come in these rooms. I've seen a hell of a lot of people come in these rooms. Because I've stuck around, you know. I stuck around, not because I'm, you know, Peter Perfect. What I was trying to say was, when they mentioned abstinence and they started saying to me a primary, I didn't hear, you know, I didn't know what the disease of addiction, I've been living with an illness all my life and I didn't even know I had it. You know, I had an illness in my head that was telling me what was good for me ain't good for me. And when they mentioned God, it went, get out of here, you know. Not that God had ever done me any wrong, really, when I thought about it. It's just, you know, that was my problem. My thinking was overrun with the disease of addiction. You know, everything was geared into negative, you know, destructive, outlandish, you know, defective behaviour, everything I did. Because what my illness wanted me doing was using hard until it buried me. That was all it wanted out of me. It wanted me dead. Or even, you know, and I've heard it say, well, it didn't actually want me dead, it just wanted me in the darkest corner on my own in a fuck off for a lot of pain. Where death would seem like a relief. And I thought, yeah, I know that. I know that. I know that one. And I'd been there. And I had this illness and I didn't even know I had it. And I got in recovery and my spirit was awoke. But I had an hearing problem and I had an head full of bullshit. You know, I had an head full of, oh, I don't know about that. Or God, leave me out with that one. Abstinence, no way. You know, and what they said was, you know, the only way you can get recovery. Because what I wanted, you know, what I really wanted to do was I wanted to use and be clean. That's what I wanted. You know, I wanted to use. Well, I think I wanted to use socially and then be clean, you know, be clean when it suited me, you know, kind of. And what they taught me in the first step was that actually I've got an illness. So I'm going to probably get up to step two here. I've got 5 minutes here. But what they told me is that I've got an illness, you know, and I'm powerless over that illness. But they said, you're powerless over that illness, but you have a solution. And in that solution, there is a power. And they said, it's a power greater than you, because in your step one, Paul, when you write your step one, it says you tried this to do this on your own, you tried that to do on your own. You tried all these things, and everything you tried failed miserably. So you need some help, mate. You know, you need some help. But the only way you can really get any help is when you fully concede, when you fully surrender. And I had to look that up and it says yield. I don't know what that actually means. You know, yield, it sounds like an Irish sign on a road sign, you know. Yield. I think it is an Irish road sign, actually. It means kind of stop. And it said surrender. And I weren't sure about surrendering because I always thought I was a fighter. But it's like anything that I learn in this program is very paradoxical. You have to surrender to get well. You have to surrender to start recovery. There is no half measures, and it says it in the books, you know, half measures avail us nothing. So we have to fully concede, we fully have to surrender, and that means we have to be abstinent. And then from that moment on, we can recover. We can get the solution. Now, it's not, you know, I wanted this to be, I wanted my life, my kind of life of misery and fucking pain and let down and disappointment. I'm talking about this is for other people, not only myself. And all that stuff. I wanted it to be all really cosmic. I wanted it to be all kind of, well, it was my upbringing, you know, my family, my dysfunctional family. I wanted it to be, well, my brother was a junkie and he was my role model, you know, and I wanted it to be, you know, well, it was that time I didn't get picked for in the cup final for the under-13s. Fucking, you know, I'd played every game and played well and I didn't get picked with a fire. I wanted it to be, I wanted there to be a reason for why I was like I was. And it took me a while to understand that actually the reason was that I got the illness. You know, I got the disease of addiction. And for the first time, and it says it on our green reading, for the first time in mankind's history, there is a solution. And it's called Narcotics Anonymous. Now, why? You know, I got in these doors and, you know, I'm driven by, you know, I understand the illness a little bit. Why would I want to leave this place? Why would I want to go? Now, I've been coming here for 16 years and that's not because I'm weird and wonderful. That's because I know where my life's blood is, you know, where I learned to live, where everything I've ever achieved is down to you people in this room, where everything that's ever been said that I have taken on board and used in my life to make it better or to pass it on to someone somewhere else has been said in these rooms. I've never heard words of wisdom in crack houses or smack houses. I've never heard words of wisdom like that in boozers or in drinking clubs. I've never heard none of this stuff. So why would I, if I know I've got an illness, a disease of addiction, why would I want to leave Narcotics Anonymous and go off and pretend I'm all right? It kind of crossed my mind a few times. But I've got a healthy fear, and what's more than that, I've got a really healthy understanding of what is available in these rooms. And they talked about dreams in the reading this morning. And my dreams I've surpassed. You know, I've done... You know, in the time, it's, you know, all these kind of wild extreme things. Well, I'm in some other zone now with all that. You know, I've nailed them one at a time. I've done all those things and I'm moving on into other areas. And what I realised was, and I'm going to finish on this. You know, what the bit I missed when I first come round, and I'll say it really loudly, so if you're new around now or you've been around a couple of years, you hear it, is it says we have a primary purpose. And our primary purpose, that's not our last thought at night or our first thought, it's our primary purpose in our lives is to carry a message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. That is the key. With a selfish, self-seeking illness, the only way to combat that is to do something with someone else. It took me a while to understand that. But I'm never more at home, never more at home in my own skin than when I'm doing something for someone else. And this Narcotics Anonymous, the program, the fellowship, the people in it have given me the opportunity to be alive, you know. To go out there and have a purpose. When things are always, when I'm under the cosh, you know, I have feelings like anyone else. You know, when you know, I can go and do something for someone else, I immediately feel better. I learned, everything I've learned is in these rooms. Everything that I come in these rooms with, I need it to like, let go of, because it's no good to me. And if you're new around, give yourself a break. You know, give yourself a break. Keep coming back here. Don't listen to your heads. Don't listen to your thoughts. You know, you might not like me. Someone might have looked at you dodgy. Someone might have not said hello. Someone might have backed you off. Someone might have looked at you and laughed and you thought it was about you. Take no notice. Get past that one, like you did with the using, you know. Go to the next meeting. And I guarantee that you, sooner or later, if you go to the 90 meetings in 90 days and attend the fellowship and do some of the things that are suggested, you will stay clean. Absolutely, you will stay clean. This is an absolute program that you can absolutely depend on. It says it, I believe it, and I know it because I live it. Anyway, I know Roz is trying to shut me up. So do what I did, keep coming back. Thanks for listening.